Hawks. Go, 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 go.
Let's go, 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 White Sox. Chicago is proud of you.
This is White Sox Weekly, the Chicago baseball conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly, indeed, live from Guaranteed Rate Field. Happy Saturday. Mark Carmen with you. Harry Tynowitz, my pal, my buddy, to my left. Hello, Harry.
Hi, Carm. I enjoyed the broadcast last night. I enjoyed your postgame. And to set the scene here, as the Kansas City Royals were in a battle with the Baltimore Orioles for the first draft pick in next season's draft, as the Royals get ready to lose again to the White Sox, the White Sox are out on the field. Ricky Renteria's squad is along the left field foul line. They're playing catch. They seem very, very loose. They seem like they're ready to go out and get the Royals. And Dylan Covey will go to the hill today for the White Sox. They recently, they recently swept the Rays. They're hot, Carm. You know, Covey pitches well today. You get Lopez pitching strong tomorrow. We could have another sweep. What do you think? You ready for another sweep?
I mean, look, they've won 3 of 4. Why not make it 4 or 5? Let's go for 5 or 6. Let's see what Dylan Covey can do today. We are leading off the show here, Harry. Hopefully technological talents will allow us to do it. Let's bring in Darren Jackson. DJ is kind enough to slide over a couple booths, talk to us to start the show. Wearing his, you always have just a golf flavor to you these days. And when am I going to get an invite for a little? There it is. Can't get it done.
You don't want a guy talking about tennis the entire day on the golf course?
No. You guys, both of you, you're out.
So what you're saying is you see us too much as is. And
no, honestly, I don't see you guys enough, but that's neither here nor there. It's just I don't trust your golf swings.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah, no, I'm not good enough to play.
I've heard that.
That's legit,
you're out.
The truth.
All right, I want to know if the only golf course I'm going to be good on is one that's got a windmill on it.
Okay, well, we can arrange that.
That's nice.
So,
I appreciate it.
All right, so here, we were just downstairs talking to Ricky Renteria. We'll play a little bit coming up here. With taking Avi out last night, not running hard to first on a fly ball, and he's dealing with a little bit of a wonky knee. Your thoughts as a broadcaster, former player, team is not in contention in the middle of August. I think Ricky trying to send a message to the player, to the team, that, hey, we're going to play hard, not in game 40, not in game 80, but all the way through 162. I don't know if you saw that as part of what was going on last night.
You know, it's funny because Ed and I did comment on the fact that right now Rick Renteria knows his players better than anybody. How tired their legs are, if they've got a little wonky knee, and what's needed to protect that, or if that's enough excuse not to run hard or whatever. And it's hard for us as broadcasters, people that are watching and observing and know the rule, and you look and you see somebody not running hard as you know they're capable of doing. Now, we got to make the assessment. Is he allowed right now by the manager to stay out there and play like this, or did the manager not see it? I'm going to err on the side that the manager must be saying, okay, he's a little banged up right now. He's been playing every single day. That's why he's still on the field. Or, literally, he's already used all of his bench and he can't take him off the field. So it's one of the two.
Right, right.
DJ, you played in the outfield for years, and we've seen Adam Engel make several catches here that have just been ridiculous. We've talked before with you about what it's like when you're in a groove at the dish. What is it like when you're in a groove defensively like he is?
Well, first of all, I probably in my career, and I played 10 years in the major leagues, made about 5 or 6 catches over the fence to take home runs away. He did 3 in like 4 days. So first, you have to have the balls hit perfectly for you to get the opportunity within your reach. And second, you got to be good enough to time it and make the plays. And he's proving out that he's good enough, that's for sure. He's figured out, stop climbing on the wall and trying to make the play, because he's missed opportunities by climbing. Padding's given in underneath him. He's fallen back on the field. He's just waiting. He's got some jumps. He's going to go ahead and say, I can get up, and he's making the plays. No better feeling, I don't think, as an outfielder. That's even more fun than diving and saving a game by in the outfield gap. But there's nothing better, because this truly is bringing back a mistake from the pitcher and saving his hiney, and that's a big thing. But, you know, Adam Engel's an extreme kind of comparison to most, because, if anything, he's as good, if not better, than anybody out there. You can go ahead. We haven't seen Byron Buxton this year. To me, Byron Buxton's the best. But other than that, I think he compares equally to anybody else.
All time? It's like Torrey Hunter, your guy, would you say? I mean,
No, all time?
Yeah.
There's two guys that I'd look at. Well, Griffey is one of my all-time favorites, but I think one of the guys that I saw that was as good as they came and legit without having to chop his step and make – Marquise Grissom was as good as there was in center field, covering ground. He played shallow, can go get anything. And Andrew Jones. Andrew Jones was the same way.
And Andrew Jones used to play so shallow.
Yes.
It was ridiculous how shallow he'd play and still get back to the warning track in like a heartbeat.
Well, see, that was Marquise Grissom, too, playing in Montreal. He'd play way in on that turf, and he'd just turn and go. And I truly appreciated that because I felt pretty comfortable in the outfield playing shallow, but not as shallow as those guys were playing.
And the most overrated defensive center fielder, can we agree on this, Jim Edmonds?
I have him up there, but I have two other guys. I think Edmonds was legitimately great out there, but he wanted to show off more. But I think Andy Van Slyke and Lenny Dykstra are guys that kind of chopped their steps, timed everything, and then made a diving play when they didn't have to. So, and they were good outfielders, but not when you're doing that regularly so you get up on the highlight film.
Well, so speaking of that, and this is incredibly nitpicky and wrong, and perhaps I should be at least suspended for what I'm about to say, but Adam Engel, the first two catches against the Yankees, he mistimed those leaps. He was coming
suspended. He
was coming down. He did not catch the ball at the top of his leap. So he actually mistimed. Now the catch.
They should cut him.
Yeah, that's not, right. I'm not saying that. And then the catch on Sunday was perfect and incredible. And not only did he get it at the top of his leap, but he also got it like sliding over. They were phenomenal catches, but he did mistime it. Am I wrong?
You're a harsh critic. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying because I always
wonder
say this.
He's not married.
even the bad catches that an outfielder makes, in my opinion, as I look at Ed and I say this, doesn't matter what it looks like as long as he caught it. That's all the pitchers care about. Catch
right.
the ball.
Right. And the other way, it's a line drive in the box score.
That's exactly right.
And for the record, I'm saying that the first two against the Yankees were 9-8s, and then the other one was a 10. That's what I'm saying.
Everything Adam Engel has done this season, this homestand, you know, this is the reason why he's going to be back with the team next year is because those three catches.
Well, look, having a guy who can play all three outfield spots and is great in your clubhouse and runs, there's always value for that. Let's talk about what's going on in the mound with Carlos Rodon. That word ace is being thrown out there. He certainly wants to be that. Are you seeing a whole other level right now that you've never seen from him? Is it fair to say that?
Well, just the consistency, yes. He's always been this guy to me. From the first time Ed and I saw him in spring training years ago, and he pitched, I believe, a game against Kansas City, and he hadn't even made the big league club yet, but he was so dominant that I remember we walked away looking at each other going, are you kidding me? He's good enough to be your opening day starter, let alone, I mean, what's he going to be on your rotation? He didn't even make the team, or he didn't start with the team, I don't think, that year. And he ended up, we opened up in Kansas City, and Kansas City, they had said after facing him, please do not allow him to be facing us on opening night. They were fearing him from what they saw in spring training. So I said that sets the tone of who he is as a kid just up from the minor leagues. He's had this stuff forever, but the problem is, has he had the consistency? This year, yes. And it doesn't even look like he's bothered. It used to be he'd make some mental mistakes. He's a little intimidated maybe by a certain batter. He's got to be careful. It looks like now he doesn't care. He's just like, yeah, get in the box. I don't care. But he's always been one of my favorite guys to watch. He's got such dominant stuff, and I know for a fact if you're standing there as a hitter with a bat and he throws his fastball and his slider, they all look exactly the same out of his hand. Good luck, and I don't want to be that guy hitting against him.
You recognize that unmistakable voice. That's DJ, Darren Jackson, Ed Farmer. They've got the Sox and the Royals coming up for you. First pitch a little after 6 after Majors pregame. So James Shields is the guy that Rodon keeps giving credit to. He talks about how important it is for him to go to the veteran, to go to a guy that's not only pitched in the World Series but won a World Series game. Are the other starting pitchers going to Shields enough? Are they? I mean, obviously, Don Cooper is one of the great pitching coaches in the game. But a guy like Shields, if he's only got 5 wins in August, he can still do other stuff for the team, like help Rodon. Did you have a guy that you went to as a younger player early on, a veteran that you would sit next to on the planes or in the dugout and kind of feed off of what they knew?
It was more along the lines of information coming from any veteran that was willing to share it to you. As a younger player, as a rookie, you didn't really go talk to the veterans as much as they came to you and said, look for this, look for that, this is what's going to happen. They came to you to teach you. And I had several guys when I was a kid. I mean, from Jody Davis to Keith Moreland to Andre Dawson. These guys all would come up, and Andre's a quiet guy, but he'd give you a little hint here and there what was probably going to take place. And even Rick Sutcliffe was a guy that would come and share information about defensively. You want to play this guy here, you want to do that, you want to do... So the information was coming from all kinds of veteran sources, and now you take that, you put it into play, and you realize these guys are brilliant because... You haven't seen it. You don't know how to respond to a guy that you've never seen before, and these guys are smarter than you when you're a kid getting to the big leagues because they've done it time and time again. So you listen to these veterans if you're smart. You don't sit there and go, oh, that doesn't work for me because, well, you're a dum-dum if you do that because they've already gone through what you're going through. So the best thing you could do is listen to their advice.
In general clubhouse culture, though, aren't guys worried that guys are going to take their jobs? So, yes, they'll... provide information here and there, but it's not perhaps as friendly as maybe the fan would think. Like, yeah, everyone's sharing around. No, like, you're all together, but you're also in competition at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great point. When you're a guy that's in the middle of his career, at the start of his career, that maybe 4 or 5 years in the big leagues, he's not as willing to share that information that's making it work for him with a young kid that's playing the same position. No, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But at the same time, he can give you a key, you know, element to help you win this at bat or make sure that you don't, you know, miss a play defensively where you need to shift just a little bit. But that doesn't mean he's teaching you how to get in the proper position, how to hold your hands or do anything. He's just giving you a key information. This guy likes his slider, so look for his slider. He's not telling you how to hit it.
Right.
You figure out how to hit it, but he's going to throw it to you.
Right.
After you guys had put your victory to bed last night and Carm took us through the magical post-game show that he does every night.
Thank you, Harry.
I was watching the A's and the Astros, and how can you not be caught up in the A's story? And now they were down 2-0, 2-1. There's a play at the plate. The guy's called out. They challenge it. He's called safe. In the bottom of the 10th, they bring in Sip, the Astros do, and Matt Olson turns on a pitch, crushes it for the game-winning homer, so Oakland's only a game back now. But Sip's front foot, it's like turning. It's like he's going to break, snap his ankle off. Where is your front foot when you were hitting, when you were swinging? Were you always the same? Were you constantly working on it? Where was your front foot? Because I'm seeing guys that are going to, like, snap their feet off.
Yeah, you know, Olson's a guy that does something different than most. Everybody, every individual is going to finish, land differently. There are some guys that you're going to, oh, this swing looks the same. But very rarely that you look at one batter to the next. You don't look at Adam Engel and say he swings like Paul Konerko did. You know what I mean? It doesn't look anything the same. But when it comes to the actual technical part of where does your foot land and where you... No, I've made adjustments according to who was pitching me and how they were pitching me. If I'm facing a left-hander that's throwing sliders down and in, I don't think it's a good idea to step in stride and finish the same way as a right-hander like Jeff Nelson throwing me sliders down and away. You've got to have a different landing spot, a different position for your hip, all these things. So you have to go ahead and always make the proper adjustment.
I'm starting a new segment, if it's okay with you, DJ.
Yes.
It's called One More Question with DJ. We're going to do it right after this quick timeout on 720 WGN. It's White Sox.
I'm out of here.
Down to something good. Tell me. Tell me that you love me. Yeah.
Ooh.
Tell me something good.
That's his theme song, DJ Darren Jackson with us.
That's his walk-up music.
Oh, that
one he's on the radio.
Well, the part that sells it is that right there.
Strong.
That's
very strong.
That's right on it.
All right, so White Sox Weekly continuing here. White Sox and the Royals tonight, game two of 3-game series, pregame at 5:35, White Sox Weekly till 5:30. I just want to ask you one thing that's going on in baseball, DJ. Ronald Acuna, if people don't know who that is, youngest guy in Major League Baseball, rookie, hit a home run in 5 straight games.
Mm-hmm. Atlanta Braves.
Leading off the game for the Atlanta Braves. They're playing the Marlins earlier this week. Jose Urena, pitcher for the Marlins, not a good pitcher. He's 3-12 in the area up near 5.
Isn't that redundant to say a Marlins pitcher isn't a good pitcher?
Perhaps this year, yes, but okay. So he's leading off the game. Here comes Urena. First pitch, 97 miles an hour. Fastest pitch he's thrown all season to a batter leading off the game. Drills him, And there is a reaction, wide reaction in baseball. Brandon McCarthy is saying you just pissed off both dugouts with that pitch. Keith Hernandez is saying that you have to hit him there. I'm curious what Darren Jackson's thoughts are on old school baseball. Guys having success, so you gotta send a message, or do we need to bury that part of old school baseball? Where are we at here?
I'd like to talk to the guy that gave up the third and fourth home runs to him. How did that happen in the first place? If you've let it go that far, why all of a sudden is it important? I don't get it. Or you're the guy now that's finally after five straight days saying, okay, well, I'm going to show him that this shouldn't have been happening. Well, I know I'm not a fan of that at all, and I'm not a fan of the fact that if you're a guy that hasn't given up a home run and you're having a bad year and all this stuff to him in particular, all you got to do is make a good pitch. Make good pitches on the guy. And I've got no problem if you want to go ahead and throw one in and move. He probably doesn't have the command to actually throw in and not hit him. So I'm not a fan of that behavior now.
Who's the best of the White Sox throwing inside?
Today?
Yeah.
Today, in today's world, it'd probably have to be James Shields.
Yeah.
And the reason is he's a veteran, and he knows how to miss inside. And that's kind of a learned technique.
When people say, you know, baseball players aren't like football players, you know, they're not tough. I've seen guys get drilled 99 miles per hour fastball, and they don't rub it. I mean, I'd rub it. So, I mean, what would you do?
You do more than rub it, for the record.
I mean, when you got hit, drilled, and it was, ow, that hurts. How do you not rub it when you're trotting down a first?
I've got a great football comparison story for you.
Yes.
When I played for the San Diego Padres, the Chargers had their backfield on the back reaches of our stadium, and they were having their summer practices. And we were walking through the tunnel by the Chargers weight room, me and a teammate, and three big linemen, I mean three guys that can't walk through this door here, were standing next to each other walking behind us. And they said, hey, and I turned around and said, yeah, they said, man, we don't understand how you can get hit by that baseball and not be scared. I looked at him. I said, what? I'm looking up and down at him going, you're scared of being hit by a baseball? Like, oh, yeah, I don't want to hit. I said, you guys take a beating every week out there, physical beating. They'd rather have that than the actual fear of a sphere being hurled at them at a high rate of speed. They feel that would be worse than the beating they take day in and day out. So isn't it crazy? So the explanation is there's no sense to it. They don't fear the pain of the game in football, but they fear the fact if you take a hard object and you throw it as hard as you can right at him, that's a fear that you just can't get over.
Carm, what should you be more afraid of, a 100-mile-per-hour orb or two guys that look like Carlos Castillo?
Well, I was terrified of playing tackle football, which is why I retired after playing touch football in eighth grade. And I remember being terrified in the batter's box. Some big dude up there who doesn't know where it's going, that was absolute torture, really, because you don't know what you're doing. You're gonna hit me in the head. Of course, I always had a good batting average, Harry, and I showed DJ my swing last week on my softball. Which, by what was it? Let's be honest.
I complimented on it. I told him that looked good. I said that looks good. I gave him credit,
like a young Frank Thomas.
Well,
let's not go there.
And slow pitch softball. Let's give him that. Yes.
Hey, before you go, Dylan Covey tonight. What's he got to do to get back on track?
I think he has to pay attention to the opponent. You can't just go out there week in and week out and do exactly the same thing that you keep doing. If you do that at the big league level, if you just go, okay, I throw fastballs, I throw curveballs in the dirt, and I throw a good changeup, they're going to figure that out and make the adjustment to you. Now it's your job to pay attention to what they're doing and adjust. And he hasn't really done that. He hasn't made the adjustment to the opponent yet and looked and watched and said, this guy's doing this, I'm doing that now. He kind of leads up to the catcher. I think the guy that's got the ball has to pay attention to that.
Interesting.
We'll watch that. We'll listen for that.
Absolutely.
And we'll listen for Farmio criticizing your reads.
Yeah.
Did you leave anything out?
Yeah. I don't write them. I just read them.
DJ, appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Darren Jackson leading off White Sox Weekly. We continue with, what do we got coming up at 4 o'clock? Oh, we have Todd Steverson, the White Sox hitting coach, right after 4 o'clock at 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly, Mark Carmen, Harry Times with the hitting coach, Todd Steverson. Thank you. This is not football. We have talked some football before. especially Mitchell Trubisky. We won't do that today. So, Yoan Moncada, we've talked about this a couple times this season now, but so he gets dropped down in the lineup, now back up. From your perspective, what are you telling the player as far as, I know you're not a big where you're hitting the lineup guy, but is there something to giving a guy a break from being at the top? Maybe he can relax a little bit if he goes down for, I don't know, a week or a day, whatever it is?
You're right. I'm not a big, you know, where you're hitting in the lineup guy. Theoretically, you only lead off the game once. So in that respect, yeah, you may get one more bat than some of the other, you know, if you were lower in the lineup. At the end of the day, you got to put together a good approach. You got to have a good plan. And you got to go in there and compete, whether you're hitting first, second, ninth, whatever it might be, or even pinch hitting. Everything requires an approach, and everything requires a good mindset. And, you know, theoretically, you know, the leadoff guy, we want you to get on base. We know you can run, score runs, and create havoc out there. You know, with some maybe of his recent indiscretions in terms of results, Skip moved him down in the lineup. Whether that relieved his brain or not, I can't even speak to that because we never even talked about it. You're in the lineup, you're just going to play, you know. I can't say if first or eighth or seventh or sixth matters, you know. Really, I think he hit fifth one day, and that's just as much of an important spot as a number one, because you're hitting behind guys, you know, like the Abreus and the Palkas and Avi Garcias, you know, that you expect to be on base and maybe get some extra bases and have to drive them in also.
Todd, in your ideal world, are your hitters up there thinking through the entire process of the swing, or are they simply reacting?
Well, I hope you're not thinking about the process of the swing. That's a paralyzer, in my opinion. We do work all day long, you know, from, you know, some guys get in at 1:30, you know, 2 o'clock till when they come out here and get ready to stretch and through batting practice to make your body do things that are just unconscious, really. Now you just want to go up there and have a plan of what pitch I want to hit, what area, or sometimes it's just being able to be clear of mind enough to recognize if a ball is hittable or not. And it doesn't matter what pitch it is. But if you start thinking about mechanics or what it takes to swing the bat, then, you know, you're way behind the eight ball on that. I mean, the ball's coming in 0.4 seconds. You ain't got time for all that.
From your perspective, how's Jose Abreu turn it around this year? I mean, we're talking about a professional hitter, but it's been and also I'm curious, like, why do you think he fell into the funk?
There's a lot of reasons why anybody falls into a funk, whether it be your own brain, whether it be a physical issue. Sometimes, obviously, being as good a hitter as he is, everybody's going to give him the best stuff that they can. They're going to seek his, you know, any hole they think that you got and what have you. And what ends up happening is sometimes hitters take their mind to what the pitcher's best stuff or what he can do rather than what you want to do. And I think for a little while there, that was part of the issue of, you know, I know he wants to pitch me like this, or I know he's going to try this, and maybe that's just not what you should have been doing. And you get away from your own personal approach. And when it takes a little while to really, because you're playing every day, it takes a little while to circle those wagons back to, hey, let me just get back to doing what I do well and why I'm here and how I got here. And maybe sometimes you during that process, physically, you do something different that becomes not conducive to being who you were. So along that lines, you also do something physical that screws you up a little bit also. And you got to get back to that part too.
Last year when he arrived, Nicky Delmonico, every time I looked up, he was on base. The Nicky Delmonico from last night, how do we keep that going the rest of the season?
Well, that's good. What, did you ask Nicky yet? I mean, you know, his work is phenomenal. He comes out every day. He comes to complete. He comes to play. In this game, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't on a daily basis, one way or the other. But if you consistently go up there with the thought process of what you know you can do, and I repeat it over and over again, have a solid approach and make the pitcher work to what you want to see. And sometimes it's not going to happen, but you got to believe he's going to make a mistake. And when hitters connect on mistakes, you see things that you saw last night. When we miss them or foul them off, it goes by the wayside in the game. You don't even think about it. You're like, oh, he just fouled a pitch off. But that could have been the pitch that you see what the results were. And then you end up swinging at a bad pitch or a pitcher's pitch at the end. So, really, it's the ability to put balls in play there that need to be put in play when they arrive.
I want to ask you last one here, hashtag Palkamania. I'm curious what you think. 26-year-old rookie, 18 home runs, exit velocity enormous. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. Left-handed hitter, striking out a bit, but I'm thinking that there could be something here. Where are we at?
Parker definitely got some power. We've seen that. He swings. He's got a level swing. He doesn't have like a pure power hitter's type swing that people would assume, like, you know, oh, he's got a little lift in his swing or something like that. No, he just squares it up, and if he squares it up properly, hits the right part of the ball, ball goes, and he hits some balls. Probably his hardest balls are actually not even homers. But in terms of how he's come up here and made himself valuable to the team is huge, especially in his pinch hit roles that he's been coming off the bench, and he's come through quite a bit, whether it be a walk or a homer or a double or something like that. With anything else, it's a maturation process throughout the game. And until you get to do this over and over and over again to find out, give yourself a chance to understand what the big leagues is about on a yearly basis, not just a monthly, you know, or a couple, 3 months, then you got an idea of who you're going to be in the big leagues. But we know one thing is a man can hit the ball at the ballpark, and he is a good hitter. He has a good history of being a good hitter statistically. So it's not like he's just a one-trick pony or nothing like that. He can hit.
Todd Steers and White Sox hitting coach. Let's do one prop before we go. Palka's got 18 home runs. What are you taking in Vegas? The Palka homers or Trubisky touchdown passes?
You have been on Trubisky for quite some time now, since spring training. You know what? I'm looking at Trubisky's arsenal, and you know what? They got a young core over there that they're starting to put together. I don't know exactly how many more games Skip is going to put Palka in the lineups for that, how many more bats he's going to get. But I'll take I'm going to have to plead the fifth on this one right here, because I don't want to dog Trubisky and say that he can't get at least 20 homers. I think Palka can get to 20 homers. I don't want to dog Trubisky and say he can't throw 20 touchdowns. He better be able to throw 20 touchdowns in 16 games this year. So for the sake of the Bears faithful, I would hope that Trubisky wins, you know, and keep the Bears afloat. Give some people around here that I know are very fanatical about them some sort of hope.
That's fair. Always appreciate the time.
You got it.
So, there you go, Todd Steverson, the White Sox hitting coach. He loves football, Harry. Get a little football, baseball going on.
Looks like he could play for the Bears.
No doubt. He's not a tiny man. I don't know. Back in the day, I'm sure he had some success on the football field. We could talk to him about that. But, I think it's a lot going on with the team when you're the hitting coach, right? Every single guy, you're working something.
Right. And, of course, I'm not talking about thinking it through as you're in the middle of your swing. I'm talking about when you go up to the plate. Do you want your guys, like, envisioning what they're going to do? Or you want your guys just, like, stepping in and reacting? You know, at that point, shouldn't they just be, like, reactionary?
Are you saying in between pitches? Like, are you?
I'm saying when you go up to the plate,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and obviously it's going to be, you know, impacted by the situation. You know, first and second, nobody out is different than, you know, two outs, nobody's on base. But, you know, when your guy goes up there, all those hours that you've spent, you know, you don't want them necessarily thinking about that. You just want them to react. You want to be in the frame of mind that you react.
Yeah, and I also think the best hitters, they have a pretty good sense on what's coming, and they're able to think logically through an at bat as it's happening, and that comes with experience.
Sure.
Not only at the plate, but also, you know, most of these guys, or certainly a lot of them, they study the video. They see exactly how they're being sequenced, when guys are, you know, throwing fastballs down, fastballs mm-hmm. up, sliders here, people know they, you know, hitters know exactly how people are trying to get him out. Pitchers are trying to get him out.
And Darren Jackson, I found that very interesting when DJ was just visiting with us, that he talked about how with every single pitcher, he would adjust to what it is they do. Whereas I'm thinking that there's a lot of guys probably that think, okay, this is what I do, so I'm going to do this, you know, and they're going to have, his best is going to have to beat my best.
Well, I thought it was interesting with DJ, too, on the pitching side of it, talking about Dylan Covey, and
yeah,
he's basically saying that he had one way of pitching, and that worked for a minute, and now that minute is over, so he has to rethink how he's going to get batters out. Not easy to do. And that, I'd say that's a pretty fair challenge for any young player, but I thought that was interesting that he thinks that that's what's right in front of Dylan Covey. It's not necessarily the stuff and throw strikes, but he's got to sort of reformulate how he's going about his business.
I wonder how many starting pitchers had a game that they threw in Fenway against the Red Sox as strong
right.
as the Dylan Covey game.
Right. He's had some phenomenal performances this year, but right now he's clearly in a funk. We'll see what he does tonight.
Speaking of the Red Sox, former White Sox ace, one of the favorites for the Cy Young, Chris Sale back on the DL today.
Yep. He's having trouble with that shoulder. So they got time in Boston when you're 50 games over 500.
You think?
He doesn't necessarily have to rush his way back. Hopefully he'll be healthy for the playoffs. Hey, take your family of four to a White Sox game before school is back in session. With the family four packs, you'll see four tickets, four hot dogs, four chips, and four sodas for as low as $49. That is a steal. Upper and lower level packages are available. Purchase yours at whitesox.com/four packs today. When we come on back, we can take a look at the week in review, Harry, and I know you have a special message for White Sox fans right after this quick timeout on 720 WGN. It's White Sox Weekly.
Head to the ballpark for Dollar Hot Dog Wednesdays. Take advantage of this unbeatable deal on Wednesday, August 22nd, or if you like to call it in the trade, this Wednesday. As the Sox take on the Minnesota Twins at 1:10 p.m., brought to you by Securian Financial, who can help you make every moment count. Find out more at Securian.com. For tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/DollarDogs today. How many could you do, Carmen?
I'm not sure, Harry, but we're having a fansided.com outing on that Wednesday. 18 fansiders coming out, sitting in the bleachers and eating hot dogs. So we'll see how we do.
By the way, you know, shame on me for not bringing this up earlier, but if you go to Fansided, if you go to Mark Kerman's Twitter feed, he is at the Carm. You can see his latest response to the Houston Rockets general manager, who said that LeBron is way better than Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
I like to defend the honor of all players who ever played for Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns both the White Sox and the Chicago Bulls, and of course I have a special affinity for Michael Jordan, the greatest player to play anything.
Who doesn't?
So I did put that out there. Thank you for the promotion.
Can I ask you a quick Bulls question?
If you want.
You know, it's a Reinsdorf world. We're just living in it. You get a pair of tickets to any Bulls home game this year.
Yeah.
What's the hottest pair of tickets?
Oh, you want to see the Lakers. You want to see LeBron.
More than Golden State.
Yeah, of course. Come on. I bet for me.
More than the Timber Bulls.
Yes. Yes, I want to see LeBron. All right. That's just me, though. To each his own. Maybe somebody wants to see the Atlanta Hawks play for some reason. I love the NBA. Let's do our White Sox week in review, Harry. And we're going to do this in a two-part situation here. Last time we left you on Saturday, Adam Engel had robbed two home runs in 1 week. And then the White Sox were playing on Sunday, and he did it again.
Swinging a high fly ball to Sid Well, right center field. Engel against the fence in right field. Leaps. Did he bring it back? Yeah, he did. Just another one that Engel steals from a batter that was gone for a home run. He brought it back and made the catch.
Now, that was unbelievable and a great game, by the way. The Sox ended up losing that one 9-7, but came all the way back to from 9-1 down, and Engel was a huge part of that day. Big hits on last Sunday. I loved it.
I mean, guys do that once in their lives. DJ talked about how he did it maybe five or six times in his 10-year career. Engel did it three times in a week.
Yeah, and then he followed up on Monday with something that made it a little closer at the plate.
A high fly ball right center field. This is going to split the gap off the bat of Engel. And that's just the top of the fence and goes out. I believe that's a home run. Yeah, it's gone. The umpire. He looked at the umpire where he just robbed the home run. He just had one.
Yep, Adam Engel with just a guy that we've interviewed him, Harry.
With his dad.
We've met the family, the whole thing. It's a guy that I think all of us are rooting for. That was home run number 4 on the season on Monday night. The Sox did lose that one to the Tigers, 9-5. Now move along to Tuesday, a special moment for a guy who's not with the club right now. Probably be back up in September.
And the 2-0 to Ryan. A swing and a long one to left. This is hit well to the bullpen fence. It's over for a home run. He hit it out of here. The White Sox now lead 4-3. How about that?
An absolute rocket by Ryan on something high and out over the plate. Well done.
That's his first.
Ryan Lemar, Harry. Cut by the Twins, picked up by the White Sox from Michigan. Had nearly 200 at-bats in his big league career, yet to have a home run. Family in attendance, playing up in Detroit, Comerica Park, and he takes it out.
Yes, and boy, how many guys can the Sox pick up that the Twins cut?
That's true. Thank you to Daniel Palka as well.
So the story breaks that, hey, Ryan Lemar hit his first career homer and his uncle caught it. How crazy is that? But then we find out that that's just the story.
Yeah, his uncle went looking for the baseball, catching
God bless
it,
him.
Going to go looking for it. That's good effort either way.
His uncle got the ball.
Yeah, well, right. That was the way it first unfolded. It was kind of a storybook thing, but then it was just good effort, which there's nothing wrong with that. Let's move along to Wednesday, and Lucas Giolito with he started slow, but he finished up strong.
And the 1-1, swinging a high pop-up playable on the third base side for Davidson. He's under it, and boy, you want to talk about a name that just went away quickly. In the inning, no runs, 2 hits, a walk, and they leave the bases loaded. They had it with nobody out, and they didn't move a runner up. They didn't get one home.
And that was in the 6th inning in a White Sox 6-5 win over Detroit. That was maybe the best inning of the year for Lucas Giolito.
Did you think that they should have taken him out of the game there? Bases loaded, nobody out.
See, look, long season, you're not trying to win the pennant. I'm thinking about the future. Guy gets to his pitch limit, I'm taking guys out. I'm not thinking about extending people at this point, whether it's Lucas Giolito, whether it's Carlos Rodon. That's how I would go about it. And that seems to be the way they are going about it.
What did it remind you of? Perhaps El Duque at Fenway in 2005?
I wasn't going quite that high up the totem pole, but...
But that's what it was. Hocus pocus, says Giolito.
I don't know. There's something about the pressure of a playoff game that wasn't going on against the Tigers on Wednesday. But, hey, I like where your head's at. And then last night, Kansas City, White Sox down 3-0. They come back and win 9-3, and somebody had 5 RBIs.
Here's Delmonico. Nicky swings, high fly to right. This has got a charge into it. Going back, this is in the bullpen. Another 3-run homer here in the 7th. This one by Delmonico. The White Sox are exploding in this inning and now lead 9-3.
As the Sox on a 3-game winning streak coming into tonight.
You know, do you believe in creating your own reality, Carm?
Sure, why not, Harry? Let's be optimistic for a moment.
My friend Paul came out to Elvis Night. He brings his family every year. He's a diehard Sox fan. His daughter and his kid, his daughter and his son are like 12 and 9. Every year, they go to a few games. He makes sure that they go to Elvis Night. So his son goes to the game, you know, like 4 times a year, always wants to get an autograph, never has been able to get one, goes down to the dugout. They get here, you know, Paul's got this, like, complex. They left his house at, like, 3:30. Paul's kid goes down to the dugout, comes back. 3 minutes later, he's on cloud 9. Nicky Delmonico autographed a baseball for him and said hi to him.
That's awesome.
And look what the heavens did. Look how fate rewarded him.
Don't lose that autograph.
Don't lose that autograph. You know that Nicky Delmonico's his favorite play. If Delmonico hadn't made a great catch, if he had done nothing at the plate, the kid would have gone home thinking, I love Nicky Delmonico. But now it's just, you know, for years and years, he's got this story. You know, and I love the Chicago teams. I met Gale Sears when I was in high school. Not that friendly. And I'll always remember that. Jesus, Gale, you're in public. It's not like I came to your house and snuck in your bathroom. Just, you know, can't you, like, fake being friendly? I'm a kid.
You're still mad at Gale?
Yeah. Get over yourself, Gale.
I think you got to get over the moment.
Kansas Comet.
But it is very nice, Harry, when you meet a White Sox player coming out to Guaranteed Rate Field and they take the time to sign an autograph like Nicky Delmonico did. Hey, after 4:30, we're going to talk to our Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago, of course, hangs out at the dugout. What goes on in that dugout during the game? Chuck will tell us after the 4:30 news on 720 WGN.
What a play!
720 WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Harry Tynowitz, Mark Carman back with you at Guaranteed Rate Field. A reminder, join us on Saturday, September 1st. Sox take on the Boston Red Sox. That's at 6:10 p.m. You can be one of the first 10,000 fans, 21 and over, to receive a White Sox adult onesie. Harry, you'd look good in that. It's presented by Budweiser, so you can watch your Sox in ultimate comfort. That's what I'm talking about, White Sox fans. This Bud's for you. Purchase your tickets at WhiteSox.com today. One guy that will be there that night is Chuck Garfine. Do you have a White Sox onesie?
I do not have one. I saw the promotion, and I was wondering what Bill Melton would look like in one of those White Sox onesies. And then I kind of got grossed out, so I can't imagine that.
Right, it's an aggressive promotion.
Melty was out with us a couple weeks ago, and he said, "Man, Chuck's gotten big. We don't hang out anymore. He's in the dugout, and I don't get to go to dinner with Chuck." Which I infer from that like you guys were actually out to dinner.
We're like bosom buddies, you know, the old TV show with Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari.
There you go. You one-upped me there. I forgot the guy's name. I see his face. Don't know the name, but you know what? Harry, that doesn't surprise me that you would know his name. You're quick like that.
I've got nothing else.
Just old 70s sitcoms stored in that brain of yours.
Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago, of course, hanging out at the White Sox dugout all season long, hanging out with Jason.
It's more like the camera well.
Right.
Well, dugout before the game, but camera well with the camera guys and the groundskeepers.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because, I mean, I've noticed all season long, I think most people have who've been watching the team, the attitude in the dugout when the White Sox win games, they don't act like a team that's 30 games under 500. Like, there's a certain level of just playing each day for that day and letting it go. I don't know how much you see that down there.
No, I do, and I think what it is they just get it. They know what this is. You know, you can't tell these guys, hey, you know, you're not going to win the division. They know. They know what this is about. They know that they are trying to all individually develop as players, or most of them. You know, you can't say that James Shields is trying to develop. Well, in a way, he is trying to develop as a pitcher. He's changed his whole style. But
right.
They know this is a rebuild. But they still want to play for this team. They've got the jersey on. They're playing for the fans, and they're playing for themselves, and they want to play well. So they get upset when they don't win, but they know what this is all about and where this is going.
I just like that they're celebrating the positive days of the year. I mean, if you don't do that, then it's really not going to be fun. And they've had some great ones as of late.
Yeah, do you ever, like, get in on a high-five when a guy hits a homer and he comes down and he's just, like, hitting everybody in the dugout, high-fiving everyone? You ever, like, get the little love up?
No. I'm not going to do that. That would not be my job.
Chuck's a professional, Harry.
Yeah, I'm not David Kaplan. David Kaplan would be there high-fiving all these guys. I like to keep it somewhat professional.
So what is the difference between going to Jerry Reinsdorf's baseball team and his basketball team and covering them?
I haven't been covering them last year. Last year I didn't cover the Bulls. But, you know, it's just different. It's baseball versus basketball. It is really, you know, when you think about it, there's a lot more. In a way, they're the same because they're both rebuilding. So it's a good question there, Harry.
I was due.
Let me just describe what's going on here. I'm talking here, but Mark is being a good producer at the same time by closing the windows of the booth because the organ is playing. So well done on your part there,
well,
Mark.
Well, I appreciate the – I didn't want to take away from the question there, but, you know, the gates to the ballpark just opened up. And Harry just broke the window over there, so we can't close the third one.
Oh,
but
I didn't
want Chuck to be talking with music here. What's your strategy with Yolmer? Because he's always trying to have fun down there.
He is. He has seen I've come close to getting hit by baseball, so he's thrown his mitt over to me during the game, saying he needs something to help me survive.
How many mitts does Yolmer Sanchez have?
Just one that I know of. He does it in the half inning when he's in the dugout, but when he comes out in the field, he'll then get it back from me.
Yes.
But I appreciate that. Maybe I should bring a mitt.
You guys...
Kerm's got his at the game.
I do.
Look at that. You have your mitt here.
I do.
Well, you're kind of in prime areas where you can... The prime area where you can get one.
I mean, last night it hit up top there. I almost had a shot at it. And I don't have it on. I watched...
You would have had to have moved to actually caught
I did move, Harry. I gave a legit answer. Dave Zaslowski and Annie Mazur can verify that. I'm here to make a play one time. I mean, it's basically...
Mazur's giving you thumbs down.
Well, all I want to do in life is be a professional baseball player, a professional basketball player, a professional tennis player, and this is the closest I can get, so I'm going to live that dream as best I can. And that's... Chuck, you don't have a problem with that, do you?
No, go ahead, do it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. So... Let's go around the diamond here. What do you think is next for Tim Anderson from your perspective?
Next for him, like, what do you mean?
Well, okay, so, you know, people, there's always the White Sox fan debate. Is he going to be a shortstop? Is he going to play in the outfield? Is he going to, and you talk to some people around the Sox, like, perhaps he's maybe even a face of the franchise guy going forward here because he's been here for a while and maybe he's not going anywhere. So I think he's had a pretty good year, right? So
yeah, I mean, is he an all-star? No, he's not. Is he getting better every year? Yes, he is. Right now, they don't have to make the decision of like, okay, Tim Anderson is our shortstop for the next 10 years. He's there right now. He's aware of the talk that's out there like, oh, maybe you'll play the outfield. Well, if you noticed all the prospects they have in the outfield in the minor leagues, that's going to get crowded pretty soon. He is, I think, right now their best candidate to be the shortstop from here going forward. He needs to improve. I think his defense, actually, in the last month has been really good. He made one error, like it was last week, but I think he's gotten better there. He's shown improvement. But I think where you really have to make that decision about his future and really everyone's future is when this team is ready to win, whether that's 2019, 20, 21. At that point, they have to make a call. Okay, can we have a winning team with Tim Anderson as our shortstop? And at that point, let's see where he's at before we make any kind of decision about where he is going to be in the future, because right now we're not really there yet.
Chuck, you seem to me like a guy who's connected. So you.
Oh, I'm connected. What do you want to know? I have all the secrets.
Michael Kopech, Eloy Jimenez.
Yes, Michael Kopech, September 5th, 3 p.m. flight out of Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Jimenez.
He's driving?
He's flying. He's Southwest, flight 462. He got an A seat, A-10.
He's on the window.
If you had to bet for real, though, you think they're both up here or not up here? I'm guessing they're not.
My feeling is Jimenez will not be here this year. I think he will be here next year. It just feels like the Chris Bryant situation, and you're going to get him for 7 years as opposed to six. You're coming up. You want instant gratification. I want it. I want to see Eloy Jimenez up here yesterday. Mm-hmm. But that okay, so I get 6 weeks of Eloy Jimenez, and then in 2025, when he's 28 years old, he's a free agent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did I want him up for the 6 weeks in 2018 when it meant nothing? That's where I think they would be thinking.
I think they're thinking that way, too. And I'll go.
Because he'd be here right now.
Right, exactly.
He'd be here.
I'd go so far as to say, for myself at least, I don't want to see him here. I think it makes more sense to do what they're doing. And, you know, Eloy's got to understand what... you know, that he's earned it, yes, on the field. But, you know, there's also the business side of it. And... He's just got to be as good of a player as he possibly can be at AAA right now, and he's certainly going to get his chance.
Yes.
Have you interviewed him?
I have.
And what would you say?
About him as a person?
Yeah.
He's
like people say he's going to be the face.
Yeah. I mean, he can be. He's legit. He speaks certainly good enough English. When the White Sox traded for him, we did an interview like 2 days later, and he was, you know, he was a little hesitant to speak, do the interview in English, but he was fine. And he's got this magnetic personality, big smile on his face. He gets it. He says he wants to be as good as Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera. I mean, this is what he says, and he's backing it up so far in AAA and AA. But I think he will be – I mean, you don't want to say right now he'll be the face of the franchise, but if there's anybody out here in their entire organization who has the potential to be the face, it's him.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Yeah,
I mean,
when you see him play, I mean, I've told the story like five times, but I think it always just stays with me. Avi Garcia is a big dude.
Yeah, he is.
Tall guy, big guy, biggest guy here. Spring training, I see Avi Garcia walking towards one of the fields before practice one day, and there's a guy standing next to him who's like towering over him, and I'm like, who is that? It's Eloy Jimenez. That's how big he is.
That's a statement, because when I When I get around Avi, I'm like, okay, you're a man, and I, yes. And I am not.
Yes,
that's I'm a boy. You're an actual. There's the all men were created equal. Not exactly when I see you, pal.
Okay, yeah. of the guys that are here that are going to the mound every 5 days, who do you see has the best future?
You mean in the major league team? Carlos Rodon. Yeah, for sure. He's pitching like the Rodon they were hoping to get when they drafted him third overall in 2014. His last seven starts have been the best stretch of starts I've seen him pitch.
After Rodon? Because, I mean, Rodon is like your 2-5 shot. So now we got to get...
2-5? Oh, are you, the odds?
Yeah.
Well, so, you asked me the question.
I know. And I did a poor job.
So who, the other one after Rodon, who do I feel the best,
yes,
best about?
Yes, of the trio that we are...
Are we talking pitch. Starters?
Yes.
See, okay.
I would go Lopez. Ronaldo Lopez.
You like him over Giolito.
I don't want to say I like him over him, but right now, and Lopez hasn't been great. He's been inconsistent. Giolito has been inconsistent, but this is what it is. It's very rare that you find guys like Chris Sale who come up with like 5 innings of minor league baseball and just dominate. And not that he totally dominated, but he came pretty close to it right off the bat. We're not going to have that with Lopez and Giolito, but that doesn't mean that in 3-4 years they can be a 3-4-5 pitcher in your rotation. If you get that, that's not bad.
Chuck Garfine, our Chuck, NBC Sports Chicago. He'll be on the broadcast tonight. I believe, I don't know if I'm talking out of turn. Are you going to talk to Rodon today? Is that in the mix?
That'll be on the pregame show tomorrow, and it'll be on the White Sox Talk podcast. I think we're going to put it out tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
I was very upset. I was interrupted 3 times.
Oh, my God.
During the interview by 3 teammates.
Ooh.
Matt Davidson was throwing gum at me the whole time. Could you imagine that being like
that's,
that?
That's a compliment.
It's like a battering ram.
I think that's a sign that you and Matt are tight, but go ahead.
Nicky Delmonico put his arm around Rodon and wanted to just totally sabotage the interview. Didn't like that.
Rude.
And then Yomer Sanchez came up, and I said, how are you? And he said, that's the best question you've ever asked me. So the problem was I did the interview right where those guys are coming in. So they just see us doing this interview, and they just decide.
If you want
an interview to go off the rails, do an interview over there when they're coming off for batting practice.
Well,
I wasn't thinking.
Your White Sox podcast, which is called what again?
White Sox Talk Podcast.
And you find that where?
Where you find all your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher Play, follow me on Twitter. And
Podcast Hut?
Is there a Podcast Hut?
There should be.
Did you ever play the Chuckle Hut?
I did play Chuckle Hut.
I just want to make sure we get Chuck the proper publicity here for coming on.
Thanks, I appreciate it, because I don't get any money for this. It's all free.
Right, exactly. We're not doing anything for you. Which,
no. I mean, I've taken time out of my busy schedule to be here with you
and
guys.
And came all the way up to do
so
it.
So I appreciate the little plug for the podcast.
Right. And you just recently it was you and Ryan McGuffey and Chris Kopka and maybe missing
Vinny Duber.
And you all sat down with Rick Hahn.
Rick Hahn, yeah. So we were at Reggie's, another plug for Reggie's.
Yeah, there we go.
I should be drinking for free at Reggie's for the rest of my life. In the South Loop, we did a live remote podcast. About 200 White Sox fans showed up. We did a Q&A. Went for about an hour and a half. So if you want to listen to that podcast, it was right after the trade deadline, and Rick was very transparent on a whole lot of things. You got to listen to that.
For those of us who haven't listened but will, and I know you want people to go and listen, so we're not going to give the whole thing away, but just one little snippet that you got out of there that you found on the highly interesting side.
Let me think. Where could I go with this? Well, I mean, it's a couple weeks ago. I don't have the greatest memory. I need to have a better memory about, like, we talked for an hour and a half. The questions from White Sox fans were incredible. It's almost like they had 3 weeks to think about it and had it all ready. They asked some tough questions to Rick Hahn.
So you're saying that for Sox fans, there's a reason to believe.
There is a reason to believe. Good album, Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen, as you slid that in there, and I made it completely obvious. You were trying to be kind of covert, and I was just like, no, don't be covert. Just give me some Bruce. No one's going to know the song Reason to Believe listening to this, do they?
Well, should
the diehards do. Mark Harmon's like, what are you talking about?
I mean, you guys are having your own conversation.
What's your favorite song off the album, Nebraska?
I will say, well, that's a good one, because that's My Father's House. That's my favorite. Yeah.
Very good song. It's about Chuck's dad's house.
I would say open all night. That's a good song, too.
We can play either one of those as a bump coming back.
That would not be a good bump.
No?
There's nothing off Nebraska.
It's not the Bruce that we know.
No, him with a guitar in his bedroom.
Yeah, it's just like Tom Joad.
Yeah, exactly.
My guy Griffin House, same thing.
We've lost all the listeners.
We have.
Mazur's into it.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's true.
Well, God bless Andy, who, by the way, has your pregame show at 5:35. Chuck, appreciate your time, as always.
Great to be on with you guys. Appreciate it. And you just keep doing what you're doing.
God bless you.
And you'll see you at the Chuckle Hut.
That's all we can do. All right.
After that, we're at Numb Nuts.
Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago, White Sox Weekly, continuing on 720 WGN.
Join the White Sox in honoring Chicago area police and fire departments on Thursday, August 30th for Police and Fire Night. The first 10,000 fans will receive a Yolmer Sanchez celebration-themed T-shirt presented by UL. For more than a century, UL has been committed to fire safety. Learn more at ul.com/fire. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/PDFD or call 866-SOX-GAME.
White Sox Weekly continuing here, 720 WGN. White Sox going for their fourth win in a row tonight and the ninth in their last 15 games. It's the five-game, six-day homestand with the Royals tonight. Then they have a weird one little stop up in Minnesota on Monday for the makeup game. And Dylan Covey going to the mound tonight, Harry. We'll see if he can pitch a little bit better than he has as of late. And the White Sox, by the way, only four games back of the third-place Detroit Tigers, Harry.
How about that?
Let's see if we can...
By the way, did I ever tell you used to be on the air in Kansas City?
I may have mentioned that once or twice that, yes, I was on the air in Kansas City, which is a great town.
Your all-time favorite Royal.
Yeah. My all-time favorite Royal?
Mm-hmm.
Probably Chris Getz, who's now working for the White Sox. He was my favorite when I was down there. Loved Chris Getz. I'm not a long-time Royals guy. I'm not going to throw out George Brett or anybody like that. Although Frank White, long-time Royal, great man. Really, really great man. All right, quick timeout. Phil Rogers from your Chicago Tribune and everywhere else around baseball is going to be with us after 5 o'clock. It's White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
At the wall, the 380, gone. A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
Back to White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
5 o'clock hour, White Sox Weekly, taking you till 5:30, and then Andy Mazur will be along with your pregame show on the White Sox and the Royals coming up first pitch at 6:10. Phil Rogers, MLB Network, longtime baseball guy, taking time out to join Mark Carmen and Harry Tynewitz at Guaranteed Rate. Phil, what do you?
An insider.
Oh, he's an insider, yes, of course. Well, everybody knows that. Phil's been getting scoops since... basically, he came out of the womb. And Phil, thanks for joining us, by the way. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
What's your favorite story from the White Sox this year?
Well,
put you on the spot.
Yeah, you have put me on the spot. I think Carlos Rodon's return, and I want to know if it's the impact of all those sliders he threw at NC State and if his shoulder damage was going to be inevitable and now he's gotten past it. And he looks like he's going to be the stud that deserved to be drafted at the top of his class and is going to be a front of the rotation guy for a long time. That's a really significant development, and I think over the last couple of years, watching him struggle with the shoulder, and then this spring he was being babied along. You just kind of wondered if the guy was ever going to achieve what it looked like he would. And right now he's as consistent as any starter in the American League,
no doubt.
So, Phil, is it a college manager's responsibility, even though the player might excel, might be a higher draft pick, is it his responsibility to make sure that the guy comes out as healthy as possible and cools it on the sliders and tough pitches like that?
100%. It is the college coach's responsibility. And if the college coach wants to continue to recruit really top-level high school guys, then he's got to do that. Right now, the University of Florida... their coach does an unbelievably good job. I think generally that it's better now than it used to be. But I do watch the college tournaments. I don't watch a lot of regular season, but when they get around to the tournaments and the best teams are playing and you can see, I can't tell you how much Carson Fulmer I watched when he was with Vanderbilt. It was a lot. And so you do see these guys, and some of the abuse, there's no other word to put it, that college pitchers get put on them in those postseason tournament rounds is really crazy. And the thing with Rodon wasn't at NC State, where he was on a team with Trey Turner. It was a great team. They were expected to win they were ranked number one pretty much the whole time. It wasn't so much that he threw 140 pitches in a game, which, believe it or not, you will see in the college games. But he was throwing like 60 or 70 sliders in a game, according to people who saw it. I mean, that's not a stat you can find on the box score. But, he had an unbelievable – his first spring with the White Sox, the Royals had just gone to the World Series, I think. So this must have been the spring of 15. And he made Eric Hosmer look just completely feeble with this wicked slider. And to me, it's a little bit like – the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout slider, that these balls, when guys get that kind of crazy movement on pitches, sometimes it's really not supposed to happen for a long period of time, and something happens to the arm. And I Carlos seems to have figured it out now, and the repaired shoulder seems to have done it. But it's not the electrifying, violent breaking pitches that he came to the White Sox with.
Phil Rogers with us, MLB Network, as we do some look around the White Sox. Let's, as far as the middle infield's concerned, Phil, give me your thoughts on Yoan Moncada and where he's at.
Yeah, I've given this a fair amount of thought in the last couple weeks, and I write for the Tribune now, and I've written a fair amount of the strikeout. I mean, the strikeout pace is beyond ridiculous. He came into last night, he had 31 strikeouts in his last 60 plate appearances. And he's on a pace to break the all-time strikeout record. The White Sox don't seem worried about it. I love him as a player. And I think when you look at his body of work, and you can go back and look at the stats in Cuba. He had a couple of years in Cuba when he was 16 and 17 and playing in their major leagues. He's never had a stretch like he's in right now. And before the All-Star break, he wasn't a world beater. Nobody was arguing for him to go to the All-Star game, but he was hitting 235, and it was kind of looking okay. And now it's fallen into the worst slump of his life. And what I really like about him is I have been in their clubhouse a fair amount over the last month as he's been going through this.
Seems the same.
I've rarely seen a young player struggle, and this is an epic struggle, but it's calm, and you don't see him when an umpire calls a third strike, which we've seen often. He doesn't turn around and yell at the ump. He doesn't fling the bat. And he's handling it so well. I think with his combination, the speed is electrifying. When he hits a ball in the gap, boom. I mean, watching him run is as much fun as you can have, really, with the White Sox. And he's both fast and quick. I mean, he gets out of the box. He cuts the corners. I think he's going to be a consistently good offensive player to go with a dynamic player. But, I think it's, there are times you just run a guy out there and you just let him play. And it might be 4 years from now before we're talking about Yoan Moncada is an above-average player. When he's played through these rough edges, I don't think it's going to happen quickly. I'll give you one example for him that I think is a possible career-type player he could be, Jeff Kent.
Interesting.
Jeff Kent, I looked these numbers up. Until Jeff Kent turned 30, he was not a guy that got on base very much. He was a low batting average guy. He would run into some home runs and do some things. And I don't think Yoan Moncada is going to be a gold glover, but I think he can be an adequate defensive second baseman and a way above average offensively as he starts playing into that. But I don't see anything that makes me think it's going to come easily or quickly to him, but I think you stick with him and give him a long time, and maybe he gets good as the White Sox team is getting good, and that would be a pretty good intersection.
Well, I hope he doesn't come up with the fake excuses that Jeff Kent used to come up with.
How about if he got to play with a guy that put up numbers like Jeff Kent's teammate Barry Bonds?
Not bad.
That would be good.
Not too bad. Well, what about the other half of the double play combination that Carmen's asking about? What do you think of T.H.? Timmy Anderson?
You know, I would think it's interesting. You almost don't think about Tim Anderson. You know, tonight's Tim Anderson bobblehead night.
Right.
And I think I'm going to write about Tim Anderson
tonight.
Did you
get your bobblehead yet?
I've seen the bobblehead. I don't. It's not in my bag yet. But it strikes me that he's kind of a little bit of a mystery man on this team, because Abreu gets so much attention because he's such a good hitter, and then you just go right from Abreu to Moncada, and then all the guys that are in AAA or AA are coming, and nobody ever really focuses on Anderson. And when they do, it's kind of grumbling. He has this 6-year contract, and he's not, you know, he's not Lindor, he's not Carlos Correa. You know, this is a great era for shortstops, and he hasn't played his way into that top tier, and he may never. But if he's an average, middle-of-the-pack, big league regular at shortstop, there's a ton of value for that guy. And if you look at some of the things he's done this year, you know, play name association. The White Sox notes has some good things today about you can project him to 30 stolen bases, 20 yep. home runs, and very few guys have done that. Last night, the double, triple, and 2 stolen bases in a game, first since Jungle Jim Rivera for the White Sox in 1955. And what I say about that is, what happened to Minnie Minoso? You know, you would have thought if it was somebody on the 1950s era Sox that would have done that. Minoso, I love Minnie. You would think he did that like every other week, but that was a pretty rare game we saw last night from Tim Anderson.
When, I don't want to age you here, Phil, or date you, but I'm just curious. When did you first start covering the game?
1984, which, believe it or not, I didn't see Minnie Minoso. I might have if Carlton Fisk hadn't talked Jerry Reinsdorf out of bringing him out of retirement one last time, because remember he did the thing, yeah. played in 5 different decades,
yeah.
and the White Sox ownership wanted to bring him back one more time, but Carlton Fisk and the players talked them out of it.
I'm just curious from your perspective, because the game is, you know, always changing, and now we've got exit velocity, and we've got launch angles, and we've got the shift, and we've got a, you know, the strike zone's ever shrinking, or whatever you want to call it. Do you think that this is what we're getting right now is something that's going to be here for a while, and that we're going to see baseball play this way? Because you know, there's some people would love to see the ball put in play more than what they're getting right now. I still see people coming out to the ballpark and watching baseball, so I don't think it's a huge issue. But I do think there is something to be said for the game moving along quicker than it does.
Well, I mean, last night's game was sub 3 hour, and it didn't seem all that quick to me. So I mean, it is something about the contact and the action. But I think we're seeing the best ever. Players, no question, players get better. And managers weren't that smart. Front offices weren't that smart until it changed when I was covering. Tony La Russa brought intelligence to a lot of dugouts, and now finally it's gone everywhere. And Theo Epstein and some other younger general managers brought not just intelligence but hard work. Like, these guys work so hard. And that, you know, there are a lot of GMs that played a lot of golf in the old days. And, you know, just the number of hours these guys put in, they find the players, they give the players places to play and ways to get better. So I don't think there's any question that the talent that you see on the field is way better. And, you know, there's so many more you know, the Latin American players and you know, Cuban players and players from a lot of, you know, Asian players from a lot of different parts of the world that, you know, used to be, there might be one or two, but they would be the outliers. And now, you know, you watch players. I think this is a good thing. A guy will come up and he'll have an Asian name, and you're like, huh, I didn't know about this guy, you know. And I think it's awesome.
So, like, you're going into, at least for a second, then I'm thinking about Shohei Ohtani, then it gets to be to Matt Davidson, who's wants to pitch and is hitting home runs, and then guys are putting more into it. You're talking about working out. I don't, and I know we have so much specialization, but to me, it's like, I feel like that's coming. Guys who can do more, because you have bullpens that are more taxed now, because your starters aren't going as long. Like, to me, it makes more sense that guys will start to actually do that.
Well, yes and no. Shohei Ohtani is an amazing freak. I mean, And I knew this watching him, the little bit I could watch him, World Baseball Classic, you know, looking at his performance in Japan. You know, I mean, there aren't for all that to be in one package. And we've seen the difficulties you have doing both things full time this year. But, you know, the Matt Davidson thing is fun to watch. But there's a reason he's pitched these games, which is they're blowout games. And, yes, he got guys out. But if you went down and you looked at his skill set and you went through the White Sox inventory of pitchers, he might not be number 50 in the White Sox system. So, you know, and it's kind of been done. Brooks Kieschnick, Micah Owings. I mean, it's kind of been done, and it's kind of been proven that pitchers are really specialists, and it's a rare specialty to be able to come in and compete against big league hitters. It's fun to watch, and if you can save your bullpen innings in games you're going to lose anyway, it seems like that has become inevitable. We're seeing we saw three innings the other night of position players for the in that 24-4 disaster.
Before we let you go, do you think that Mr. Kopech, Mr. Jimenez, will be up here anytime soon on the south side of Chicago?
I do not think Michael Kopech will pitch for the White Sox this year. I just think there's no real point in pushing a guy who had never he'd never thrown more than 135 innings before this year. I don't think you want to pitch him through September. I do think Jimenez will be up. It might not be till rosters expand, which also coincides with when the White Sox stop playing the Red Sox. but I do think he's earned the chance to be here in September, and I think the White Sox will give him the chance to come up and play.
Phil Rogers, MLB Network. Great to talk to you, Phil. We appreciate it.
Enjoyed it, guys.
Thanks, Phil. White Sox Weekly. We got one more segment for you before the pregame show at the bottom of the hour. This is 720 WGN.